This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
This week on APB Cold Case, we're bringing you a special Behind the Badge episode. We're taking you inside the story of a vicious serial killer and how his last victim brought him to his last stop.
This is APB Behind the Badge. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
Our story begins early on a chilly Friday morning, April 13, 1984, near Beverly, Massachusetts. A 19-year-old girl we'll call Patty is driving north on Route 128. Here's Peter Carnes, former chief of police for Wenham, Massachusetts.
This woman was driving on the highway on Route 128, which was a four-lane divided highway, and her car became disabled. And she pulled over to the side of the highway in the breakdown lane and was awaiting some assistance, and this car pulled up with a Firebird. The gentleman offered her assistance and said, "Do you have a garage or a mechanic that takes care of your vehicle?" And she replied, "Yes." And he said, "Well, let me drive you there. Is it nearby?" And, "Oh, yes." So she got in the car with him, and this was Christopher Wilder, the serial killer. They drove along for about probably half a mile to an exit ramp. And she explained the location of her garage, which was to the right, and Wilder started turning the vehicle to the left.
And this is where everything changes for Patty. Up to this point, she thought she was being helped by a good Samaritan. But when the man goes in the opposite direction of where she says her mechanic is, her fight-or-flight instinct kicks in.
And she immediately tried to jump out of the car while it was moving on the off-ramp, and probably doing 5 to 10 miles an hour. As she did that, he picked up a .357 Magnum and put it to her head, and she jumped from the vehicle.
Patty gets up from the roadway, running out of her shoes and sprinting for her life toward the nearby Gordon College campus. Wilder has a decision to make. Does he chase her, or does he flee?
8:30 one morning, and we receive a call, a 911 call, for a woman screaming in the area of a college. It's a Christian college in the community. It was not uncommon to receive a call for noise or people screaming or whatever around a college campus. I mean, it goes on all the time with kids having a great time. And the officer was dispatched, and he got to the scene of where the call came after the woman screaming. And he called back and he requested a backup because he noticed in the roadway when he pulled up to the area a pair of women's shoes in the road. He started canvassing the area, and quickly another 911 call came in reporting a hysterical female was banging on someone's door. Officer Dave Doyle immediately got to the scene and made contact with this woman.
Wilder decides to flee.
Wilder switched lanes on the highway instead of going northbound where he picked the woman up. He resumed traveling on 128 in the southbound lane. And he immediately traveled through the city of Beverly, which is the next area, next contiguous community to Wenham, where I was chief. And he got on Route 93 and started heading north out of Massachusetts towards New Hampshire.
Chief Carnes said that at the time of the incident, they thought they were dealing with an attempted kidnapping and assault and battery with firearm. Because of the seriousness of the crime, Wenham police sent out teletype messages and radio broadcasts for the suspect and vehicle. A Boston TV news station picked up on the activity and called the police department, and they said they were sending out a team. Shelby Scott was the Channel 4 TV reporter, well known in the greater Boston area.
I knew Shelby personally, and I was able to meet with her for a couple of minutes as we brought the victim back to the station. And she said to me, "Peter, do you think this could be Christopher Wilder?" And I go, "Who is Christopher Wilder?" So I have a Boston area television reporter telling me who this individual was. She said, "Yeah, he's come across the country, and we've heard in the media circles that he's probably going to be soon to be added to the FBI most wanted list." And I was shocked. I had no knowledge of him. I was frankly a little bit embarrassed that a reporter is telling me about a a wanted individual. So at that time, we did an identikit, which was the way of drawing a sketch of a person.
The identikit that Chief Carnes mentioned is a series of transparencies of various facial features. Investigators put together an image based upon a witness's description.
So we did the identikit with one of our detectives, and lo and behold, the picture came out, and by that time we had, from the FBI, we had a wanted poster, and it was an identical resemblance to Christopher Wilder. So the broadcasts went out, the information went out through New England, description of the vehicle, description of Wilder, the fact that he was armed and dangerous in the area, attempted an abduction. Specifically, information was put out to be on the lookout, not only for him, but also for any victims that might be potentially in his way.
Wilder's MO was first enticing his victims using a ploy and using his charisma. And his attacks involved brutality. Sometimes he drugged his victims, then sexually assaulted them before beating, electrocuting, stabbing, strangling, or shooting them. Christopher Wilder didn't become a serial killer overnight. So just how did his evil obsessions begin? Wilder had roots in Australia. According to published reports, one of his first crimes involved the 1962 gang rape of a 13-year-old girl in Sydney when Wilder was 17. 6 years later, in 1968, he got married, but soon became the focus of a sexual assault allegation, which he admitted to, but the charges were reportedly dropped when the victim declined to testify. But his marriage ended around that same time. In between the gang rape of the 13-year-old and the sexual assault allegation, there's a double murder called the Wanda Beach Killings, and Wilder's name has come up in that case too. The incident involves two 15-year-old girls killed in 1965, their bodies found in the sand on the beach near Sydney. It's said to be one of Australia's most infamous cold cases, and it remains unsolved to this day. The girls, Marianne Schmidt and Christine Sherrick, had taken Marianne's younger siblings to the beach on the morning of January 11, 1965, according to Marianne's brother in comments to the Sydney Morning Herald. The report says that Marianne and Christine went to pick up their belongings from the beach, but never came back for the younger kids, who eventually went home on their own. The girls were reported missing that evening. The next morning, a man discovered the girls' bodies, at first thinking they were mannequins. The article goes on to say that the girls had been raped, slashed, and stabbed. Marianne's brother told a newspaper she'd been stabbed 25 to 30 times and, quote, "she'd almost been decapitated because her throat had been cut so viciously," end quote. One report said that Christopher Wilder, who lived near the victims, would have been about 20 years old at the time. It was in the 1970s when Wilder immigrated to Florida, where a published article says he, quote, "reinvented himself as a playboy real estate investor." Reports say that between 1971 and 1975, Wilder was charged with sexual misconduct crimes, one where he enticed a teenager so he could take photographs of her. Wilder was a race car enthusiast, reportedly racing his own car in the Miami Grand Prix in February 1984, and who frequented shopping malls looking for victims under the guise of being a fashion photographer, on the lookout for his next fashion model or beauty queen. He traveled back to Australia on at least one occasion before coming back to Florida. Reports say that on February 26, 1984, aspiring model Rosaria Gonzalez went missing. She'd been doing promotional work for the Miami Grand Prix, the same race that Wilder had just competed in. About 1 week later, a Miss Florida finalist and former Orange Bowl princess also went missing. Police would later connect these crimes to Wilder. His savage spree continued, abducting women, torturing, and killing them, although at least one escaped in Tallahassee when she broke free after having been shocked and having her eyes glued shut. Murders continued in Texas, Kansas, Utah, and Nevada. And then in Torrance, California, he abducted and raped a 16-year-old, who we'll call Tammy, but he didn't kill her. He decided to use her to help him get other victims. Wilder began a trip back across the United States through Arizona, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. Using his captive, Tammy, Wilder abducted a 15-year-old in Indiana, stabbing her and leaving her body in the woods. but she survived and was rescued by a passerby. Wilder and Tammy headed to New York State, where Wilder abducted a 33-year-old woman, then shot and killed her. He directed Tammy to drive the victim's gold Firebird as he followed. Wilder ultimately released Tammy at the airport in Boston, allowing her to return home to California, where she reported her harrowing ordeal to police. The FBI had been tracking many of these crimes, and now this surviving witness would help them put some of the pieces together.
When he came across the country from the West Coast to the East Coast, he had picked up women at different locations, fairly attractive male. I think he was probably early 30s or whatever. And he'd wind up taking them to motels, and in the motel, he engaged in some activities there and wound up murdering these females. Usually they were women from 20 to 35 years of age. He was just a very sadistic killer. And he was not really under the microscope for a long period of time. It just all of a sudden it all fit together for the FBI and other agencies across the country that this is the target, this is the person they're looking for.
But they're not the only ones looking for Wilder. One of Chief Karn's concerns at the time was that the abduction of the young woman in his jurisdiction happened right near a college, and they didn't know if the suspect was still on or near the campus.
Across the street from where this victim was abducted in Wenham was, as I described earlier, a college. And that college had about 2,000 students. And typical college, probably 50% of the students were co-eds. And we immediately had to set up a law enforcement perimeter on that campus to search the interior of the campus, but also be concerned about the exterior perimeter, make sure, A, if Wilder was still in the area, he was not getting in there. And second of all, if he was in the area and tried to get out, then we'd be able to apprehend him. So there was a lot of moving parts in this case at the time. And in a small police department, our resources were taxed. We had the cooperation of the major crime unit of the Mass State Police. The local barracks at the time for the Mass State Police was in Peabody, Massachusetts. They dispatched troopers to the area. And it was a massive search for the vehicle, the Firebird, that Wilder was operating.
In addition to the state police assisting Wenham PD in searching the college, all law enforcement agencies throughout Massachusetts and in neighboring states are alerted to be on the lookout for Wilder and the stolen gold Pontiac Firebird, the one that Patty jumped out of after she was abducted. It wouldn't take long to find him.
About 2 hours later, in northern New Hampshire, two state troopers who were in plain clothes went by a gas station and saw the Firebird in question that had been the subject of the New England-wide search for Christopher Wilder. And the two troopers exited the vehicle, and as they approached the vehicle, Wilder drew his 357 Magnum. And he, at the time, was cornered by the two troopers in the gas station area. And I'm unclear whether he shot himself or he shot at the troopers first, but he did receive a abdominal wound, an extensive abdominal wound. And there was some thought that round that he fired into himself exited his body, exited his car, and impacted one of the two New Hampshire state troopers who was critically wounded, but he was able to survive the injury. We think he was panicked after that woman jumped out of the car that, you know, he thought the end was near. And that was the end of Christopher Wilder's travel across the country because he died from his injuries at the gas station.
A UPI report in the North Adams transcript on the day after Wilder died said that Wilder suffered two gunshot wounds. The first as a trooper dove on top of him as he went for the gun. That first shot passing through Wilder and then into the trooper. And the second shot went into Wilder's head. The Boston Globe reported that neither trooper fired a shot. Chief Karns will never forget the details of that fateful day in 1984, especially the courage of the young woman who not only survived an attack by a vicious serial killer, but who helped police identify and locate the man.
Any investigator, I don't care where you are, whether it's local, state, federal, a lot of times you really feel for the victims and you somehow you get re-energized, you work harder, you work longer, you take a lot of extra steps to solve the case or work with the victim. And this particular woman, I remember vividly, she talked about her faith and how her life was spared that day. And it was amazing watching this. And the other thing, which was amazing, in this very traumatic few moments of her life, that she really looked at this person and looked at the gun, and she was able to describe the weapon. She was able to describe him physically. And we heard from her for, you know, several years thereafter. And, you know, we're talking many years later now, and I have not had any contact with her. I don't know where she is. I hope she's well. I hope she's successful. And she was a very brave soul on that day in the 1980s in Wenham. And to have the foresight to jump out of that car when she did. And we were proud and we were honored to work with her. The conclusion was probably not the outcome everybody anticipated, but certainly there had to be the need for justice for those victims. And as I say, 24 victims, I mean, it was a horrendous record of tragedy and despair across the country. And there was a lot of messages here. I've still got the articles written in the local paper and the Boston media and things about the case. And, you know, there was a real message for victims, how to prevent becoming a victim, how to be careful with people you meet, be careful with relationships you form very quickly at a sporting event or something, or at a mall or someplace like that. That was his venue. That was his choice of finding these women would be at a sporting event. He was big into NASCAR and racing and different types of sporting events and things.
In the realm of notorious serial killers, Christopher Wilder's name may not be as well known as Ted Bundy, but Wilder was every bit as much a lethal killer. He used his good looks and charm to lure women, making them believe he could get them lucrative modeling jobs and their photos on the covers of magazines.
No question, he was smooth, he had a lot of finesse, he was able to charm his victims, and he was able to accomplish his devious acts and design to entice these women into coming with him and things like that. They pray for the souls of the 24, at least 24. They weren't sure that there could be more.
Chief Carnes has dedicated his life to law enforcement. He retired from Yarmouth PD in 2008 and became the chief at a Massachusetts college for 11 more years before opening up a police academy on Cape Cod. He's had many experiences in his career, but he told me there's always those cases that will stick with you.
These cases don't go away. And I ride by. We still go to the North Shore. I'll ride right by there. And, you know, I'll be driving. And, you know, my wife will be sitting there. And what do you think's in my mind? I mean, I'm driving along thinking about, yeah, that's the exit there. And, you know, that's where she was that day. And you know, all of a sudden the gears start turning and they never stop.
Thanks to my friend and colleague, Chief Peter Carnes, for sharing his story. And thanks for listening to this special Behind the Badge episode of APB Cold Case. For more episodes, blog, and show notes, go to apbcoldcase.com.
For more information and show notes, go to apbbehindthebadge.com. APB Behind the Badge is an original Spawn Group production.